Hello, hockey fans, and welcome.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We've got a big show on tap for everybody today. We're going to have Russ Cohen in to preview the Metropolitan Division in the National Hockey League. We're going to go down the Vegas lane with our Vegas Hockey Podcast insider, Dana Lane, discuss the latest news out of the UNLV Rebels and the Golden Knights camp. And then in a special overtime segment, we're going to have Mark Richmel in to discuss his latest venture into cinematic hockey with the California Golden Seals story, and we'll talk about the unique history that that team has in the National Hockey League. So stay tuned. It's going to be a great show. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa.
We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com.
We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals.
And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know,
I'm
like the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Clint Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the UNLV Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. All right, hockey fans, welcome once again to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. As always, I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa, and we have a packed show today. We're going to look at the Metropolitan Division in high detail with our special guest today. Russ Cohen of Sportsology.com joins us. He's the author of many sports books. He's a radio host on NHL Network and recently to the TSN radio family. He's been kind enough to put our show up on his page this year, and we really appreciate that. Gentlemen, Chris is with us. Russ is with us. Good day to you both.
Same to you. Same to both of you.
So let's jump right into it. I know we're on a time constraint this morning with you, sir, and we appreciate your time.
No problem.
If we're in the Metropolitan Division, I guess we're going to go ahead and start with the Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. Obviously, nothing short of the Stanley Cup is acceptable for Pittsburgh and their fan base. Quite a bit of roster turnover there. Let's talk about some of the subtractions on this team. Notably, Marc-Andre Fleury is here in Vegas. Nick Bonino, Trevor Daley, Ron Hainsey, Chris Kinnick, Matt Cullen. A big part of their locker room core for sure is gone. Two-thirds of the KGB line is gone. Have they done enough, and is the young guys that are going to be looking to make this team, are they legit? Go ahead.
No, it's okay. Are they legit? I think some of their youngsters are legit. I think, yeah, losing Marc-Andre Fleury definitely hurts. Certainly they wouldn't have got there without him last year, so that's something they won't have this year, but it doesn't mean they can't make it without him this year. I mean, they've you know, done it before. So that's okay. Hainsey, yeah, it hurts a little bit. Cullen, yeah, it hurts a little bit. Bonino hurts the most because I don't think there's anybody really out of, you know, even for their youngsters that could replace them, Matt Cullen, just because Bonino, rather, because of the face-offs and the toughness and everything. But I still think they're going to be okay. They're getting Chris Letang back. I mean, that's massive.
Big piece.
I mean, again, Ron Hainsey was filling in for Chris Letang. So any missing offense for any of this turnover could come from Chris Letang. So in a way, they lost some of these guys, but they're still pretty dynamic. They still have Crosby. They still have Malkin.
Sure.
We'll see if a guy like Daniel Sprong can make the team. I mean, that's, you know, they have some guys still.
Yeah, the question for me with Pittsburgh is the center depth.
Yeah.
You know, that's you're going to have to find someone to jump in behind. Obviously, Crosby and Malkin are going to be fine, but
yeah.
And then, you know, Matt Murray, even when he first came up and had his run through the Stanley Cup playoffs, everybody commented on his demeanor being very calm, not awed by the moment, and his play on the ice certainly proved out that assessment. But it's a different animal being the bona fide number one as being a 1A, 1B type with Andre Fleury there. Have we seen anything from Matt that maybe having the mentor and Marc-Andre Fleury not there is going to be a problem for him? Or
no,
in my opinion,
no.
I think he's going to be fine, right?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. I'm not worried about that at all. I would definitely say while the center depth isn't great, you know what? You'll still see a boost, I think, this year out of Jake Guentzel, even from last year,
right.
And I think that's going to help him. Sheary's still pretty damn good. Yeah, they'll throw in, like, Rowney and Wilson maybe at those other center spots, but they have good wingers to go with that. So, you know, they added Ryan Reeves for that fourth line, which means they added more toughness, and maybe Sestito doesn't play. Actually, yeah, Sestito. And, who is Sestito with now? Is he with them or is he with No, he is with them, right? Because he and Reeves collided recently.
Right, correct.
So,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we won't see Sestito probably as much or ever because Reeves can actually play hockey where Sestito really can't. So I think they'll be okay. I mean, defensively, even that third pairing with Mata and Hunwick is fine. Like, I'm not really worried about him. Justin Schultz has proven now that he is a lot better than when he was with Edmonton. He's actually become the guy that most everybody thought he would become. And so last year was a huge year for him. So I think they're good. I still think they're, you know, the team that will be the number one out of the Metro, unless all of a sudden guys just start dropping early because of the Stanley Cup issue where you get guys just they off a short summer, they get banged up. If that doesn't happen, they're still the favorite.
Okay. Well, let me bring in Chris. Chris writes for the IonIsles.com, as everybody knows, and is a lifetime Long Islander. So let's jump over to the Islanders and bring Chris into the show. Chris.
Hey, Russ. Great to have you on the show. So, you know, to me, Russ, the Isles are one of the most interesting teams in the league. You know, if certain don't go right or certain things go wrong, I can see a repeat of last year of just missing the playoffs. But if things come together, and one of the many hats that you wear is you also appear on the Hockey Buzz webcast, and I read this morning Eklund's blog on his surprise East team that he thinks is going to have a big season is the Islanders, and that was music to many people on Long Island out here. So what has to happen for the glass half full versus what you're concerned about with the Islanders, a kind of a big picture about them? And if you can, in your answer, being the prospect guru that you are, and you and one other person I go to for prospects, in terms of the roles, what you see out of Barzal, Hosang, and both of you in terms of this year. And everyone should know that even though Russ went astray somehow in his childhood, he is a native son of Long Island. So I'll leave you with that.
It wasn't that I went astray. It was that the Rangers were there before the Islanders. So when I lived on the Islanders didn't exist. And I started watching hockey the year before the Islanders came into existence. So literally, it was just a year away. Otherwise, it could have been a different story. But anyhow, and I really got killed during high school when the Islanders were great. So it was not fun to sort of live that out. But I don't know about the Islanders because I don't feel as confident as what you read this morning from Eck, because my problem is I think the John Tavares situation is a little bit of a black cloud in the locker room. And I think it's going to be one of those things where, you know, nobody's going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about it. Nobody's going to ask him about it. But the arena thing's going to be talked about all year. And as a result, it puts him basically in a state of flux. So what I think will happen with John Tavares is the same thing that happened with Steve Stamkos. I think he will ride out the season. Then he will court everybody in free agency, and then he'll make that final decision. And I think that is not going to bode well for a great year this year. Now, as far as impact from some of the other guys, yeah, Barzal will definitely have impact. Now, you know, I like going to Roster Resource and looking at their stuff. They're suggesting Barzal is going to be a fourth-line center. I don't think the Islanders should make Matt Barzal a fourth-line center. I don't think that helps anybody. If I would rather see them pair him on the third line as a winger and let him get a lot more ice time, at least if they're going to stick with Kazikas at center. So that's what I would do, but we'll see. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it. I don't know how that's going to roll yet. Hosang is going to be interesting because, again, he has all the talent in the world. We have to see if he could put it all together, and we have to see if he could just stay composed on the ice. Because his biggest thing is just when all of a sudden he goes off the rails penalty-wise, then that affects his game. Otherwise, I think he'll be fine. So I think that helps them, and I think offensively they are pretty good. But I do think there's a little bit of a black cloud. Defensively, I think they're fine. I like their pairings. I like the guys they have. I don't know where Ryan Pulock's fitting in, though, and that worries me. To me, he should be fitting in there, and you know, some places don't have him fitting in. But if it's really a situation where if I'm going to decide that I'm having to play on a given night Hickey, Seidenberg, and Pulock, well then Hickey and Seidenberg are going to start splitting time because I got to get Pulock in there. I got to play him on the second power play. I got to have that shot on my power play. If they don't, I'm going to sort of shake my head a little and kind of wondering what Doug Waite's doing there. Dal Cole's another one where, you know, he looks good right now. And so at the end of the day, can Dal Cole crack the lineup? Yeah, I think there's definitely a way he can crack the lineup. I mean, if he has to crack the lineup at the expense of someone like Jason Chimera, then so be it. I mean, you easily could put him in instead of Cal Clutterbuck, but for whatever reason, because he's a character guy, whatever, they traded a lot for him, he's going to play a lot of games. Even if he doesn't score many goals, they like him in the room. I get it. Chimera does give him speed, but you know what? If Dal Cole is ready, he'll give him a lot more. And so I kind of wonder where Dal Cole fits in this, if he does.
Last quick point on them is how do you feel about Doug Waite in terms of, you know, managing those situations you brought up? And I'm sure he's very aware of the point you brought up about Tavares as well, making sure that he can do the best he can given that situation.
Yeah, he's powerless in the Tavares part. So there's nothing he could do with that. But I thought he handled the team really well last year and was worthy of coming back. And so I think he helped their power play a bit. I think he is open to having young guys make the team, and I think that's a positive, where Jack started to become pretty closed about young guys making the team. He was worried about his job, and, you know, anytime you have a coach worried about your job, they're always going to fall back to that default with the veterans, and that always worries me. So I think you're fine with Waite in there, and I don't think he's a hindrance at all. I like the fact that they have Scott Gomez. I said hello to Scott Gomez the other day, actually, when during the rookie game when the Flyers played the Islanders. The Islanders won that game. It was fun to see him, and I think he'll be a positive influence. So I think those things are right, but I think at the end of the day, the way the Metro is, unless they're having like this unbelievable season, I think they're going to come up a little short for the playoffs.
That's gotta hurt, Chris.
Eck put a smile on my face this morning, and Russ took it away. All
I'm
right.
Sorry, I'm just being realistic.
I know. No,
well,
I
here's the thing. I look at it this way.
Go ahead.
If you take off your orange glasses for a minute and you say, are they better than the Rangers, Pittsburgh, Washington, or Columbus? That's what you have to answer.
I always try to take my glasses off, orange glasses off, but I really do believe that they're an intriguing team from the standpoint of I can easily see them just missing the playoffs like last year, or I could see them landing second or third in the Metro if everything kind of came together, because they are one of the deeper teams in the league. I grant you about the point about Tavares, but he's a smart cookie. He has to know that, so he's got to do everything he can to help that. He is the captain of the team as well. So
I don't think it'll affect his play, but it doesn't mean there won't affect teammates' play.
Right, and I think Wade is good with the young players, and I think they will push that. So, like I said, I can easily see them, and I hope I'm not being a cop-out here, but there are a few teams in the league where, like Winnipeg, I can see them having a really strong season, and I can see them just coming up a bit short. So those teams, to me, are really intriguing. And the depth that Pittsburgh and Washington got hit with, I think could open the door. Not that they're not going to make the playoffs, but they're not going to have 115, 120 points. So.
No, I agree with that. I will say this, though. As far as Winnipeg goes, I think Mason will actually get them in the playoffs. Remember, he had the 10-game winning streak for the Flyers.
Yeah.
The only reason Steve Mason's not playing for Philly now is because Dave Hextall doesn't like him. There was a clash there, and he always went to Neuwirth over Mason. But anytime the Flyers were successful with those two goalies, it was really always because of Mason. So I think Winnipeg's got a little bit more going than the Islanders, but not much. But again,
they're in a tough spot too. Yeah. All right, Mark. So I think you wanted to hit Russ with Columbus.
Yeah. Well, I want to go to the Blue Jackets next, and they're another intriguing team. 108 points last season. They did a little bit of roster shakeup. The big addition, obviously, being the Breadman, bringing Panarin in, sods out a couple other pieces going both ways in that trade. We're about to learn if a lot of Panarin stats, which are awful gaudy for a first and second year player, how much of that was beneficial due to having, obviously, playing with Patrick Kane, and how much he can take his game really on his own shoulders and translate that into offensive production with Columbus. How do you see that shaking out?
Well, I think Alexander Wennberg plays the game at a pretty high level. And
Absolutely. So
I don't think it's and Nick Foligno's a good going after the puck kind of guy and puck possession guy too, and has scored, a decent amount of goals in his own right. Not a star or anything, but a real good player. So I think the pace will still be good, and I think the Wennberg-Panarin connection will be very strong. I mean, will he have some point drop-off? Yeah, he might, because Patrick Kane's Patrick Kane. But I think Panarin will be fine. I don't think he's going to be affected that much by that. I like what Columbus has. I think this is probably the strongest lineup offensively that they've ever run with, and that's a big thing. Defensively, they're really solid. Like, if you're going to complain about anybody, you would complain about their sixth defenseman. And if you're complaining about a team's sixth defenseman, it's sort of like
you're okay
complaining about like that extra outfielder in baseball, or your backup catcher or whatever. I mean, the sixth defenseman doesn't affect the game that much. So I love what they have on defense. I think it's great. I'm glad they didn't get rid of Ryan Murray in a trade. So all that looks good. Now, offensively, the big boost for them, besides Panarin, really could be Pierre-Luc Dubois. He had two goals last night. He had a spectacular World Juniors from a perspective that he didn't score a lot of points. Everybody sort of just keeps thinking that, points are everything and that's how you're going to determine a guy's success. But what I looked at to determine his success was that he was playing well at center, which is what they want him to be. And on this team, he could be a third-line center. And he also played really well defensively, very good physically, because he's a big guy.
and he skates well, and he does have that offensive talent. But even if he's not bringing a ton of offense, if he's on a line with, let's say, Borgstrand and Calvert, it's a pretty good line. And I think he'll, I think production could be really good. So I think that's a nice boost, and I do believe he'll make the team. Now, what could really hurt him is on the fourth line if they lose Josh Anderson, because I don't think he's signed yet, right? Unless he, I was driving back yesterday and I saw that.
Yeah, he hasn't signed yet.
Right, so he's threatening to now go to the KHL or Europe. And if they lose him, that'll be a little bit of a blow, because he really is a nice player. Now, who would they fill in that spot? It's a good question. I don't know if you want Sonny Milano on a fourth line. That's an issue.
Native son.
So, sorry? Native son is how you said, yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah. He's from my hometown. It's funny
That's right.
I'm from North Massapequa, but like anything else in the world, North Massapequa, like unless you live on Long Island, to the rest of the world doesn't exist. So what ends up happening is everybody gets defaulted to Massapequa because, you know, the Seinfeld's from there and the Baldwins and everything else. And I had to battle that also for, you know, my whole childhood. But he's actually from North Massapequa, and that's where I'm from. So it is fun. But again, I don't know if I'm putting him on the fourth line, right? So that's where they could get hurt a little bit on the fourth line. If that doesn't happen, maybe Tyler Mott is the guy that, and I like Tyler Mott a lot, and I think Chicago did lose something when they lost him. So maybe Tyler Mott, even though he is a center, maybe they throw him on the wing. That's possible. And then maybe that'll be okay. But again, Josh Anderson's a real good player. The season depends on Bob. We know that. If he gets hurt, it's a problem, although I really do think their goaltending situation is fine. I love Corposalo, so I think he's one of the best backups in the league, actually. The fact that John Tortorella actually likes both of these goalies is a miracle. And so that's because he used to complain about goalies all the time, and now he never complains about his goaltending. You never hear boo. And so, and he didn't really about Lundqvist either, but all before that, he did. And so I think you have a good situation here. I think they're a playoff team, but they're going to be right on that, on the bubble, I think. I think they're going to struggle trying to pass a team like the Rangers. I think the Rangers will go second or third in the Metro, depending on what the Shattenkirk factor is.
Well, since you brought up the Rangers there, Russ, I see three, let's call it areas of concern, and you tell me how legitimate. Obviously, are they still strong enough in their own end on defense? McDonough is awesome, but you know, after that, in terms of center, Mark brought up before about the center of Pittsburgh. I think it's probably more of a concern with the Rangers. And do you think Pavlov can be as what Ranta has given them the last couple of years? I kind of wonder about that as well, because Ranta was really good for them, and I know Pavlik was playing, not in front of the best team in terms of defensively in Winnipeg, but I don't know if how much better the Rangers could be at times. They could be a bit sloppy as well. So how do you feel about those three areas for them?
Yeah, pre-Ranger Andre Pavlik, I don't like. Now maybe 5 years ago I would have said, yeah, I like Andre Pavlik, but then he sort of fell off the ledge. But this is a reason that Benoit Allaire is the Rangers' goaltending coach and really like an assistant coach. And that is because he has been able, you go back and look at guys that he has turned around, and I think he definitely improved Ranta, certainly gave Talbot a name. I mean, it's just,
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and so like anybody who really came in there really did well under his tutelage. So I think there's a chance that he'll do well for them. Now, center position is tough. I don't know if Bo Nieves will make it as their center. Fourth line center. I don't know if he'll make it. So if not, then they're looking at guys like Lettieri, and we'll see how that shakes out. What could happen is Nieves makes it to start the season, and then when Faust comes back, and Desharnais gets moved to that center spot. Because right now they got Desharnais on the wing, but he could move back to center. So maybe that's what the ultimate plan will be. But in the interim, I think they're okay at the position. It's not great. And if the new faceoff rule is in effect, I think it's going to hurt Kevin Hayes, because Kevin Hayes always puts down that shoulder, it seems, before actually connecting with the stick to actually win faceoffs using his size. And he had been able to get away with that. If he's not able to get away with that, it's going to hurt his faceoff percentage for sure. So we'll see, because you guys have seen it, right? I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep. Yep. I have definitely seen that a bit. Yeah.
That's and other players do it too, and I think that's why they're sort of trying to redefine the faceoff. But right now, defensively, they are in good shape. I mean, the Shattenkirk factor, I think, will be better than what a lot of the haters are talking about, because just because he didn't do well with Washington doesn't mean he's not going to do well with the Rangers. He is going to do well. Vigneault is going to really work well with him. He is going to have every offensive opportunity, and that's all you have to do with Kevin Shattenkirk. He'll figure out the rest. Defensively, he'll be fine. Now, they will be addition by subtraction with Dan Girardi. Nobody is – I'm going to make a prediction. This is my bold prediction. Now, there's always going to be on Twitter some dummy that posts, oh, we missed Dan Girardi. But I'm going to say nobody is going to and when I say writer, I'm going to say, like, from a national writer perspective – nobody's going to say they missed Dan Girardi. It's going to be addition by subtraction. He's going to be lost in the locker room. Like, if that's a loss in the locker room, but he didn't have that many good moments last year, and the year before was spotty too. So I think just not having him there is fine. Now, what will be the sticking point is Nick Holden now will be the whipping boy. If he doesn't have like 11 goals like he did last year, his defense was awful in the playoffs. Now, this year, he is their number six. And this is, of course, assuming Mark Stahl makes the team, even though Vigneault sort of put him on the hot seat by saying, you might not make it. Who knows if he'll even, you know, be on the starting lineup. So, but I think he will. I don't think they have a choice. So I think, unless Berezgalov will really impress them, the Russian kid they brought in, I don't think Stahl's going anywhere, at least not right away. Now, he could play himself out of a job. He could. And if that happens, that's fine. Look, we're going to see a better year out of Brady Shea, and he had a great year. Like, he was close to being a Calder candidate. So that's a big boost for them, too. And right now, where you see, like, Stahl listed as a second-pairing defenseman, I'm not sure about that. Mark Stahl may start the year on third pair, and they may start Brady Shea on the second pair. And that's what I would do. I would put Shea and Smith together and go with that and not worry about the third pair as much, because I got to start getting Shea more action, more shots, a little bit of power play, because I'm going to get more points out of him. And so they're in a good spot with that. The backup goaltending, look, if I know the Rangers had that great run with Cam Talbot, but most years that does not happen for a team. And if you lose your starting goalie, it's sort of like the NFL. You're not going to be in good shape. So they can't worry about that. They'll have Buchnevich back. If he's healthy, an interesting line of Buchnevich, Zibanejad, and Kreider will be fun to watch. Now, will they miss Derek Stepan? Sure. But they're not going to miss him in the faceoff circle. He was average to below average, and he wasn't a top-line center, but he got forced into that job. We know that. Zibanejad at least is a bigger guy. Now, that's a pretty big, strong line with those three young guys. And so that's something where that could really be a catalyst for them, or it could be really a struggling point. But I think they started to get back to making sure that they got at least two or three stretch passes a game to Kreider to give him some open ice opportunities on goalies. If they can do that every game, Kreider's goal total will jump again, and that's what they do need to do. Second line, Nash, Hayes, Zuccarello, that's a really great line. Now, this is the last year of Rick Nash. He's not going anywhere. They're not trading him. He's just going to fade away from the Rangers. We'll see what he has in him. He's not going to score 40 goals, and I can't tell you he's going to score 25. Like, I just don't know what Nash will do, but at least on the second line there is continuity, and I do like the way that line plays together. Third line, you know, looking at Grabner, Miller, and Desharnais, I don't expect Grabner to have the same kind of year last year. For the same reason he couldn't bury those breakaways with Toronto and buried every one of them with the Rangers, it'll probably come back to earth a little. But the team's good. I mean, McDonough, Shattenkirk, that's a lot of teams would kill to have that first pairing on defense, and I think that's going to be a key to the season.
Okay, well, let's, I was seeing if you had a follow-up there. I want to go to the Flyers next. They did, the way the lottery played out wasn't really obviously the way anybody expected, but it certainly didn't go the Vegas Golden Knights way. But
no.
Philly did jump up, grab the number two ball, and for most of the season, Nolan Patrick was the consensus number one. With New Jersey going with Nico, Patrick falls in their lap, which should ease the loss of Braden Schenn somewhat if he can step up and take that second line center spot. And I know you're deep into hockey prospects and have probably seen way more of Nolan Patrick than me. Is he going to be able to jump in at the start of the season and grab that number two center spot?
No, I think they'll give it to Couturier. Like, I think if Patrick makes the team, because I'm not going to be one of these guys that says it's an absolute stone-cold lock, because what if he stumbles in preseason? What if he has a little nagging injury? What if? So I'm not going to say he's a guarantee, but I'm saying he's getting closer every day. He's definitely shaking the rust off. He looked good against the Bruins yesterday, or day before yesterday now. So that on Thursday. I'll see him on Tuesday against the Rangers. That'll be a nice test for him. See how he reacts with the rivalry. I think he'll be good. I still think he would have been the number one for most teams. I think there was a lot of reasons why New Jersey went with Hischier, and that's fine. I love Nico Hischier. I don't have a problem with the pick at all. But I still think Patrick is fantastic. And so there's a couple of X factors. I think Laterra is really out to prove himself again. I did an article on Sportsology where he was very open and candid with me, and Jory Laterra basically needed a change. He almost could tell that the Hitchcock factor was getting to him. And so that's nice. He's going to probably be on the wing, so he'll have an opportunity to score more. So I think you have something there. Lindblom is a guaranteed stone-cold lock to make the team, and he looks fantastic in the preseason. He looked fantastic in rookie camp in the rookie game. He's looked good all along. He's strong. He's smart. He might put in 15, 17 goals, and that's a nice thing. He'll play that third line. Filppula will center that line. Filppula has been real good for them. I think don't worry, not worrying about the salary aside, he's a pretty good center to play with. And Matt Reed, I don't know. We'll see if Matt Reed can keep that job. Taylor Lear is trying to take that job. There's a bunch of guys. Mike Vecchione's trying to take that job. I mean, Vecchione was a heck of a player with Union. I watched him his whole college career. And he's strong and he plays great defense. And Hextall likes defensive guys. He has more finish in his game, I think, than Lear. But Hextall does sort of like Lear because he's fast, but he's not a big guy. Vecchione's a little bigger, a lot stronger. Vecchione's got a family of weightlifters. So it's something where bodybuilders, actually. So it's something where he's grown up with that. So he's rock solid on D. So he certainly has a chance for that job, too. Fourth line, you're probably looking at Wheel and Weiss, and then we'll see about that center spot. Would they have Patrick do a fourth line center? No way. So if Patrick is going to make it as a center, then when you're looking at fourth line center, that's sort of up for grabs. It's probably Scott Laughton's job at this point. Laughton's had a real good camp. He's finally, in the good graces of Dave Hextall. I think Hextall was sort of lukewarm about him previously. So I think Scott Laughton is most likely that fourth line center. And so they'll be good. They'll be a team close to the playoffs. I don't think they'll make it. Defensively, I think they're good, but they're not as good as they're going to be in the future. I think right now you're looking at Robert Hogg making it because of he's a little older. He's got the good size factor. So I think you're looking at that. And it seems like Sam Morin is fast-tracked here. I haven't loved the way Sam Morin has looked, but if they're only going to put him on the third pair and just expect some defense and physical play, then I think he can get through that. Provorov and McDonald are still probably going to be the top pair. I don't think Sanheim will make the team out of camp because I think they want to keep him in a top guy role, top pairing role, let him get all that in Lehigh. And if there's injury, sure, bring him up. But only if there's an injury in the top four. They're not going to bring him up. There's a bottom pairing injury because they got other guys they could bring up. And so that's, I think that's the direction that we're looking at. And so right now, and Gostisbehere's got to hit the net. Like, he's had problems with that. Brandon Manning's that extra defenseman that they have. If Morin really doesn't look good, then Manning will steal his job. And Morin will go back, and then he'll be that guy that if there's a bottom six spot with an injury, he's the guy that'll pop in. And if there's a top four, then Sanheim will pop in. And that's a lot better than the Flyers have had. You know, Stolarz, I feel bad with that injury. I think that's going to kind of really hurt his Flyers career. Right now, Brian Elliott, I still think he could bring it to some degree. I don't think they want to play Brian Elliott too much, but I think he's certainly capable. So, I mean, I look at the team and I say, if everything hit right, everything, they could make the playoffs. But everything has to hit right, and it didn't all hit right last year. And so, and when it did all hit right, they made the playoffs, what, in the last game of the season? So we'll see. It might come down to that again.
Okay. Well, I did want to – you touched on it a little bit. Brian Elliott leaving St. Louis, bounced around. And it doesn't sound like you think he's going to lock the number one position down. Are you looking at a 1A, 1B with Neuwirth and Elliott then?
Yep. Yes. I believe
much
that's the
same
case,
way
that
Mason and Neuwirth went back and forth,
yep,
too.
Well, but here's the thing. So, but last year, if you remember, most of us thought, hey, Mason's going to start the year, and they started with Neuwirth. And Hextall said,
right,
don't look into that. It's whatever. And but it was. Like, you know, Mason didn't play a lot at the beginning. Neuwirth was,
yeah,
playing more. But then as Neuwirth would be, he gets injured. Then Mason comes in, and Mason has to go and play all those games in a row, and he reels off the 10 in a row. This is the problem with Neuwirth. If Neuwirth could play 50 games, then the Flyers might be able to make the playoffs, but he's got to play at least 50 games. I mean,
and that's,
a lot
of that'll come
down
to the coach too.
Yes. And that's not a lot, but because we know Elliott could certainly play the other 32, but I think that he's got to play at least 50, Neuwirth. He does.
Okay.
All right, real quick, last one for me, last two teams I have. In terms of Carolina, Russ, if I told you they're going to get B-plus goaling for the entire season, do you think they can make the playoffs? And the other part of that is the Capitals. If I was a Capitals fan, I'd be a little concerned about their depth, especially on the blue line. If one of their top three defenders were to miss significant time, I'd be nervous if I was a Capitals fan. Am I wrong on that? So those two quick hits on Carolina and Washington.
Well, Carolina is close. They're really close. I like their defense. I think they've got a good crew there. I don't know if someone like Hayden Fleury is going to make the team, but if he doesn't, boy, that gives them even more depth. So I think their defense is finally where you want it to be. I think offensively, look, Sebastian Aho is going to have an even better year this year. And Skinner's healthy. If Skinner stays healthy, like I think they have enough offense. They have offensive defensemen. They look good. I mean, it's all going to depend on that goaltending position. It really is. But I think it's going to work out. I do. I think the same reason that Cam Talbot was able to make the transition, and I questioned it at the beginning. I don't know if he can do it or not because nobody knew. But I think Scott right. Darling can because he reminds me of Cam Talbot. I've interviewed him. He's sort of like the same kind of guy. He's a positional goalie, doesn't think too much about anything. I don't think he's going to overthink it. So if Scott Darling has a great year, Carolina's going to put a pressure on a lot of teams. Now, Washington, there's definitely a fall off, but it's not a fall off the cliff fall off. Like, they're going to still make the playoffs. Like, I'm not worried about the Capitals not making the playoffs. What I'm worried about is the Capitals going out in one round in the playoffs, and then maybe Barry Trotz would have to worry about his job. So that's where we're going to have to sort of keep an eye on things and see where they're at. It's never all Ovechkin's fault, even though people want you to believe that. TJ Oshie, keeping him was huge. I think he could have an even better year. I think the loss of Johansson's a loss, though. That's the market show. But as I say that, Will a guy like Varana get a, finally get a chance to play regularly? And Burakovsky, if he's healthy, that could make up the gap there. So they've got guys. They do have a load of guys. So I'm not overly concerned about them.
What about their blue line, though?
Yeah, it's a little askew. There's no question about it. Alsner is a loss. I it's like anything else. You hope that some of the young guys can step up for them. I mean, that's the big thing. But again, Trotz is not the one that really likes to put in rookie defensemen. And so based on that,
he might have to.
I mean, look, he might go with Taylor Chorney and Aaron Ness as a bottom pairing. He doesn't have to. That's the thing. And if he doesn't, then we'll see where that's going to land them, because I'm not in love with that. Now, they did just pick up Jokke Puokka as well. Is he going to get a contract? I don't know. A lot. He's physical. He moves the puck well. And he has a little bit of a offensive game too, but are they going to let him percolate some more? They might, because that's sort of been their way. Siegenthaler is a hell of a player, but probably doesn't have a chance to make the team. But maybe Jokke Puokka is the X factor, because I liked him a lot in Calgary, and I think he just, you know, was just on the outs a little bit with the coaching staff. And then offensively, they still have Riley Barber really not doing anything for him, and so at least if there's an injury, he could be the guy this year that sort of breaks in there and gets some play. But right now it looks like Verana could play the third line. That could be some nice offense for them, because he just has to play consistently. He's been doing it at the AHL level now for a couple of seasons. So I think they're fine, but I don't know if they're a Stanley Cup team.
Yeah, for me,
you know, if they...
Niskanen and Orlov, they got to stay healthy. I mean,
yes,
they can miss a game here and there, but I agree with you. I will say this. I wouldn't be surprised if they fell to a wild card team.
I mean, it wouldn't shock me, but I think they'll do better than that. But Orlov gets a bigger role this year, and I think with a bigger role, you're going to see more points out of him. I think that's going to help him too.
Well, if they need more veteran defense for their bottom six, they could do their old general manager a huge favor and take a couple of George's extra defensemen out of Las Vegas for a couple of picks.
I don't think they have the cap space.
No, but you know, Las Vegas is not going to have all those guys after the trading deadline. You know, some of them are getting moved.
Right. Yes, by the
they got to get them off the roster before the season starts. I'm looking at having to lose at least two or three of them before the start of the regular season, to be honest with you. They're holding 11 NHL contracts right now, and what that could mean is the only guy that's waiver exempt right now is Shea Theodore, and you don't want to put him back in the AHL and do what the Ducks did to him and frustrate the kid. He's NHL ready. He's going to be our number one, the Knights' number one defenseman for the next 10 years if their plan works out. So,
but they still might send him back to start because of the numbers.
They might have
to. It's not impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They might have to, and unless they can move a couple of those guys, even put a, you know, it might, don't be surprised if a guy like Lucas Bisa just gets put on waivers and hope someone picks him up. And then if
he might, and then he might end up reporting to Chicago anyhow. Like, I don't know how many
exactly
they could put in Chicago. I think they have to have like 11 guys or something minimum. Is that the right number?
I think that's correct.
So because of the shared affiliation. So if out of the 11, they can move three of them down there, that helps the problem.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah,
real quick.
Stoner and Stoner would clear waivers too.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Real quick, the Devils last in the mm-hmm. East last season. Just what do you expect out of Nico as the number one overall pick this year? Real quick, we're going to have Dana Lane coming in here in just about a minute or two. So not really much to look at in New Jersey, but a quick synopsis on Nico.
No, I think Nico could get 20 goals and 50 points if things broke right. I do love the fact that they have Will Butcher there, and I think if Butcher gets on a power play with Heischer, if that could be a real nice thing, because look, Damon Severson is nice and he's a decent player, but if Will Butcher is feeling comfortable at the NHL level, he could be a great power play guy. And so that's something where I think the Devils have really upgraded themselves and really could put a, you know, like a hurting and scare into teams. I think that's what the Devils will do this year. And I think trying to corral Nico Hischier at times is going to be a chore, especially you're going to have him with Johansson. That's probably a pretty good pairing there. Or are you going to put him with Taylor Hall? I mean, it's up to them, but they're probably going to put him with Johansson to start on a second line. And if they do that, that's a pretty dangerous combo right there. And I also think Pavel Zacha will have a big year. So I think they're going to cause some problems. Drew Stafford's a nice addition. Defensively, they're still a little weak, but they're getting better. I don't love the top pairing because I don't know if Andy Green's a top pairing guy, but he's captain. They're going to do it that way, whatever.
Right.
But Butcher and Santini's not a bad pairing, though. If they go with those guys, that's actually a pretty good pairing. And I do have a lot of faith in Butcher, and I think Hischier will be a guy that we talk about for at least part of the year for the Calder. I don't know if he'll stay in the race the whole year.
Okay, Russ, tell everybody where they can find
McAvoy and DeBrincat and stuff. Sorry.
Tell everybody where they can find your stuff, sir.
They can find me at Sportsology.com. You could listen on SiriusXM. Our show is on the weekend. You just go to their homepage, and or you can go to TSN's podcast page and listen to the show at the end of that. You can go to our SoundCloud page and listen to your fine show and a Friday night podcast I do called Off the Post. And if not, then I'll end up in other places before the end of the year, too.
All right. Top three in the division, who you got?
Top three in the division, Penguins, Rangers, Capitals.
Okay, that's not a bad pick, sir. Thank you for spending some of your Saturday morning with us, sir. We really do appreciate it, and also the affiliation with the Sportsology page. Have a good day.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm excited. I love your guys' show.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate
it, Russ.
That.
Look forward to having you back. And hopefully,
all good. Thanks,
on the
Mark.
Island.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it.
I'll see you on the island. I haven't had Zorns in a while. I was there for a couple weeks ago, but I didn't get to Zorns, so I have to get back.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, sir.
All right. See you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Russ.
All right. Well, let's jump right over to Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of UNLV Rebel Hockey and our Vegas Hockey Insider here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Dana, good morning to you, sir.
Hey, good morning. How are you? Beautiful day in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. How about it? We're getting our first little hint of autumn this morning. Yesterday, we had a nice little wind change the weather quite a bit. It's just a little cool outside. No, we're down towards the 70s, sir. our autumn is a little bit different than everybody else's, so it might be as high as 80 today, but still very nice change of the weather last night. How's UNLV camp shaking up? They're off to a pretty good start for their Division I debut, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we talked after one game last week, they beat Arizona State and then came back and beat them again. So they started off 2-0. Home opener last night at City National Arena, which I happen to be sitting outside right now, which probably looks strange to a lot of people. But they took it on the chin. Last night to Colorado, lost 1-0. They lost 3-0. It was a 1-0 game forever. Then full goalie in the 2-on-1, and it was 3-0. But, these are kind of the ups and downs for the program. And a lot of these, a lot of these folks remember when, they're 28-7 at a D2 level, So there is a definitive step up between Division II and Division I. And, Colorado came in, they were not intimidated, they played physical. And I thought UNLV showed the ability to again play at this level despite the loss. I can tell you this, quick assessment of last night without rewatching it again, the passing has to be just a little bit quicker. There's a split second of thinking and looking, and that has to evolve into knowing, and that's hockey IQ and knowing where everybody is and being able to cycle the pucks down low and get good scoring opportunities, getting pucks to the net. I mean, they had 24, 25 shots on net last night. In fact, I think they had the shot on goal advantage. But, you know, the problem is when you have a Colorado does, if you keep most teams to the perimeter, you're not going to find success. So today, I think they're going to come out a lot more physical, getting pucks in the net and getting those dirty, greasy goals in front.
Okay, when's their next game? Is it a home game down there?
Yeah. Well, next game is, which is the reason why I'm sitting out here, is today at 1:30 this afternoon. And I'll tell you this, aside from the game, guys, if UNLV did not see what's going on with their hockey program and the type of revenue that this thing potentially could generate, there was more people for, I mean, this is club hockey, guys, okay? So it's not intramural for sure, but, you know, it's not Division III or Division I hockey. There had to be 1,100, 1,200 people at this game last night. Standing room only.
Wow.
Inside the arena. And the fact of the matter is that there was more people at this game last night than I've seen at any 10 baseball games combined, and that's supposed to be a revenue sport. This is a revenue-generating sport that I don't think UNLV quite grasped the magnitude and what they could bring to their university.
Well, that's super good to hear. Today at 1:30, I might be able to pop in for a period or two. So hopefully I'll look up there and be able to say hello to you for a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Chris. He's got a couple of EGK questions to hit you with, Chris.
Hey, Dana, great to have you back.
Hey, Chris.
On the night, so what have you seen in camp with them in terms – I'm very curious about the youngsters they got in expansion and any youngsters in terms of the draft. Anyone kind of sticking out and making their case and saying, hey, I should be on the opening night roster?
Well, I think we talked about this last week with Tyler Wong. I mean, he was a kid that, you know, stuck out to me in practice. And yesterday or the day before when the Knights decided to send a lot of their kids back, including Cody Glass, who's going back to his junior team, they decided to hang on to Tyler for a little bit. And I was very interested the other night. Unfortunately, none of us got to see it, but he was in the starting lineup against the San Jose Sharks. And the Sharks, you know, put a pretty good representation of what they will be on the ice that night. And in most part, you know, and we take these things with a grain of salt, because until Marc-Andre Fleury's in net and, you know, they have a real team out there, it's hard to know what to take from all this. But the fact that he's still on the roster and he will be in Anaheim tomorrow night, you know, or presumably, we haven't had that roster sent out yet, but, you know, presumably he will be there. And I just can't wait to see the evolution of this kid. Do I think he's going to make the roster? Probably not. But this is really good experience. And by him sticking around, I think George McPhee and the brass for the Golden Knights are saying, you're really in our plans. We're very impressed with what you brought. And honestly, he's the one guy that has really stood out. Now, granted, against San Jose, you know, he didn't have, you know, he didn't have a hat trick and, you know, didn't have this sparkling effort for sure. But, you know, he gave I think he had 12, 13 minutes, and I thought he accounted himself well from what I have heard, because, again, nobody decided to broadcast the game. But I love the kid. I really am excited for him in his future. And I know everybody's kind of focused on Cody Glass, and Cody has settled in as camp has gone on. His hockey vision has gotten better every time I've seen him play, both in practice and in the games. But, you know, for me, it's still Tyler Wong is the guy that has the spotlight shining on him the brightest.
And real quick, before I hand you back to Mark, have you heard any latest rumblings in terms of a possible trade that McPhee could move a defenseman? And if so, any particular names?
Yeah, there's been no rumblings as far as that's concerned. I mean, McPhee has said from the beginning that they're going to let this thing play out in camp. And, of course, you know, there's been some injuries around the league, so there's possibilities there. But, you know, you just might be in a situation where you have to put these guys on waivers. I mean, that may be just what they have. I'm not sure if McPhee went into this thing thinking he was going to have the glut of defensemen that he has at this point. I think he probably thought it'd be in the 8 or 9 range at this point rather than the 11 range. But, you know, a move is going to have to make, or these guys are going to be put on waivers. So that's, you know, as simple as that. But, you know, I guess that's you kind of roll the dice a little bit with taking as many defensemen as possible. But, no, I haven't heard anybody specifically that was in trade talks or somebody that's looking to get moved. I think, you know, we still have a little bit of time where McPhee can, you know, kind of see what happens with injuries around the league. And I think he's just waiting by his phone, waiting for somebody to call them. In the meantime, you know, you're out there showcasing these guys and getting them as much ice time as possible. But, you know, a guy like Griffin Reinhardt, I mean, if you want to throw a name out there, if a guy that I've watched and have seen so far early on, yeah, he'd be a guy for me that just kind of is in the bottom mix. So, you know, maybe there's a market for him. Maybe a guy like that just goes on waivers, but he's the first one that comes to mind.
I don't think he's a defenseman that's not very good. Clear waivers because, one, he has small cap. Number two, he's still young, and I know his progression hasn't been what everyone has hoped for, both from, you know, not so much with the Islanders, but when he went to Edmonton in that big trade. But someone would take a chance on him being 22, 23 years of age. Maybe it just takes him a little bit longer. You know, again, we get spoiled with these youngsters. Johnny Boychuk, who's a stalwart defenseman with the Bruins and now with the Islanders, top four guy, you know, he didn't reach the NHL until he was 25. So sometimes it takes a little bit longer. So a team really depleted on defense, such as, I mean, if I was Colorado, there's no way I would let him pass me on waivers with the lack of defensemen I have and see what we have with him. So someone like him, I can't see clearing waivers. Some of the guys making some money, some yes and some maybe, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not clearing waivers, I mean, for sure. But, you know, I mean, you can't carry 11 defensemen. And he,
no,
to me,
you're right.
You know, I mean, he's the guy right now that, you know, looks a little out of place. And, yeah, granted, the age is certainly there. I mean, that's, you're absolutely correct about that. But we've seen him in a couple stops now where, you know, look, his reputation is he just has not gotten – the teams have not gotten out of him what they thought that they would. And I can clearly see why that is early on. So, you know, if I'm ranking defensemen, he would definitely be on my bottom as far as guys I would want, you know, in my organization.
And you know what, Dana, at the end of the day, I mean, look, Edmonton didn't have a lot to offer. Neither did Vancouver.
For sure.
So at the end of the day, they took Reinhardt and Spezza, and, you know, they wind up somewhere else, you know, because no one got hurt during camp and you didn't have any, you know, depth problems. I mean, that's just how the cookie crumbles. That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, no harm, no foul. It's not a negative against.
Even with Spezza, I mean, the guy's out there and he's taken a bunch of shifts. And I think he took 26 shifts the other night. Or the two games ago against Colorado, and, you know, they're out there definitely showcasing him, that's for sure. But he's out there, and he's being physical on the ice, which I really liked. And, you know, I don't know, there's some things about Reinhardt's games. I question some of his decision-making. There was a 3-on-2 the other night that I didn't think he played that very well. I wish I saw the San Jose game. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if I'm just ranking defensemen and you want to keep your best defensive guys in the organization, and if age is not a factor, I mean, you know, you got to cut somebody. And they're not getting, and all these guys have got
NHL contracts.
A bunch of guys that don't have, they have NHL contracts. There's not two-way deals going on here. So you got to make room with someone. And I don't know if this is the situation that McPhee envisioned himself being in. But here we are, and then you have to choose, you know, you have to choose the guys that are going to be best for your organization. I'm just not so far impressed with him. So regardless of age, I just need to see something that says, okay, well, yes, you have age, but you also have this potential behind it. And I have not seen that second half yet.
Well, real quick, we got about a minute left, and our next guest, Mark Gretschmill, is a producer and creative force behind a new documentary film, The Golden Seal Story, and I see him on the line. Real quick, what do you – just a general question. What do you make of the way they're calling games in the NHL this year? Is it just me, or are they? Is it a disaster? Because I don't want to see 8 5-on-3s in every game, and I don't think a face-off – a violation, even if it's the second consecutive one with somebody already in the box, is worthy of another 2 minute penalty to throw teams on 5-on-3s. I want to get your take on it, but I really don't like it or the way they're calling flashing.
Well, let's hope that that's a quick thing, and once the regular season starts, they kind of settle into what
Goodness
they
gracious.
Normally do. And honestly, look, I don't want to see somebody in the penalty box getting the same penalty that somebody would for putting a stick in somebody's back. It's not the same type of thing. You can't give a guy
Absolutely.
2 minutes for that. You continuously just kick him out of the face-off circle until you – I mean, if you have to continuously do that, that's fine until you get to a person that's not very good in a player that's not good in the face-off circle. So the penalty is – you're probably not going to win the faceoff. That's the penalty.
Period.
It shouldn't be a 2 minute penalty. That's absolutely insane. And these 5-on-3s that are being created are absolutely, it's egregious, honestly. I mean, I'll even go back to UNLV last night. I'll go back to UNLV last night, okay? They're lining up for a faceoff. Both guys get to the dot. They drop the puck. There's just none of this. Roll over, play dead. We need you to bark before we give you the treat.
Yeah, well, see, that's what gets me is if the ref and we've all seen the little fake drop of the puck real quick and guys jump in and the dude get thrown out of the circle. It's putting too much power in the ref's hands to create a power play. First of all, if he comes in and he has a hiccup when he drops the puck and someone moves, then he throws him out of the circle. The guy's skate touches the line in the next attempt, and he's in the box for 2 minutes. It's slowing the game down. I know that most likely they want to get more 5-on-3s, more power play time, and increase scoring. It's always been the goal of the league to increase scoring, and this seems like a very manufactured way to get it. Now, nobody wants to see somebody's finger hanging off their hand because of a slash. But if you have a one hand, I was watching, I think it was the Boston game, and the defenseman's bringing it out of the zone, and the Boston forward just does his 180, and he's tracking the defenseman up the boards. One hand on his stick, he bumps the guy's hip, and it's a stick check. It's a stick tap. It's not slashing. He got 2 minutes in the box for tapping the guy on with one hand on his stick. It doesn't benefit. To me, it slows the game down. It breaks up the continuity industry that's being shift throughout the game. And if they're doing this in the preseason to try and send a message that the flashing is going to get cut down, we're going to clean the faceoffs, that's fine. If they cannot continue to call games like this through the regular season, or I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's I think you have to use your head a little bit on these things. And I don't think every cross check is the same. I think if you're putting your stick into somebody's back, but you're not extending your arms, you're not doing it with any kind of force, I don't think that's a cross check. So they're certainly not going to call that, even though by definition, that's a cross check. I mean, it's like, you've got to use your head with some of these rules and these 5-on-3s, because guys are getting thrown out of a face-off circle. It looks ridiculous. It looks ticky-tack, and it looks Mickey Mouse, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm glad we're on the same page with that.
Speaking of Mickey Mouse, I'll be down in Anaheim for the game tomorrow.
Okay, good. I'm going to follow your Twitter feed at Dana Lane NHL. I'm sure you'll be live tweeting as much of the game as you can.
Yes, sir.
Sir, we got to let you go this week. We'll be in touch throughout the week, and we'll talk to you next weekend, sir. Thanks for coming in.
All right, guys. Have a good day. Thank you for having me.
Yep. And now I want to bring in a very special guest in our overtime segment today, Mark Gretschmill. And I believe I'm getting the last name correct. Correct me if I'm not. He's put together a pretty interesting documentary about the California Golden Seals and the story behind their little unique piece of National Hockey League history there, as short-lived as it was. Mark, welcome to the show, sir, and thank you for taking the time out of your Saturday to join us.
Hey, Russ, thank you so much. I'm glad to be part of the show.
I wanted to just start real quick. What it was that inspired you to create this little neat piece of history?
You know, why tell the story of a defunct team that played 9 seasons starting in 1967? You know, a team
yeah.
that was more famous for wearing white ice skates and trying out orange pucks and had a crazy owner, made disastrous trades that cost them Guy Lafleur, a team that was involved with things like the only on-ice death in a National Hockey League game. You know, they had everything from people involved like Bing Crosby, Tom Hanks, even the Hells Angels with the team, and future superstars that they lost like Reggie Leach and Charlie Sims. So I thought it was a story that needed to be told, and part of the reason is I'm a transplanted Canadian, and when I was 9 years old, we were living in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the new NHL hockey team, the Oakland Seals, started playing at the nearby Oakland Coliseum. So my dad would take my brothers and I for 9 seasons. We would go to games, and there were a lot of downs, a few ups, and you know, it was a really memorable. It taught me to love hockey, and I always thought their bizarre story needed to be told. It was kind of like it was a franchise where everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
Well, it's interesting that in such a short period of time, all of the things that you just ran down could happen in one place at that time. So it's really probably more or as well telling a lot of a personal story from you, it sounds like, as spending a lot of your childhood over in Oakland at the rink. Was that a lot of the impetuses that is part of your personal story as well that you wanted to tell?
Well, I used to take my Super 8 movie camera to games. I would shoot footage, but my profession, I later became a TV news producer, and since 2000, I've lived in Los Angeles working on television documentaries. I was a producer on the E! True Hollywood Story, did 25 of those. I've done shows like Lindsay Lohan, The Road to Jail. So, but I wanted
to do something
a little bit more. Yes, yeah. My ghost story, a lot of different shows. But the Seal story, I just thought was really, really fascinating. And, you know, there were so many things that, you know, they were always on the verge of great things happening. And, you know, they became the laughing stock of the NHL. But yet they would score some incredible upsets. And what I did is, you know, I did this kind of on a shoestring budget. I did a crowdfunding campaign. But I basically took a video camera, some sound gear and lights, and I traveled across North America, and I tracked down more than 30 former players, team officials, journalists, fans. I even got Wayne Gretzky to sit down, and Wayne was actually very knowledgeable about the Seals' history, and he had known the players of the families of 2 Seals players when he was growing up. So that was quite a coup. So I really enjoyed talking with him.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, but it was, yeah, you know, I mean, people don't remember because when the NHL expanded from 6 to 12 teams, what happened was the reason there were 2 teams in California, there were the Seals and the Kings, is the NHL had signed a contract with CBS. And part of that deal was CBS wanted 2 teams of the biggest TV markets in California. And so, therefore, the Kings and the Seals. But you know, they started making mistakes right from the very beginning. The Western Hockey League Seals that preceded the NHL Seals played in San Francisco at the Cow Palace, and did quite well. But they wanted the Seals to play in the brand new Oakland Coliseum Arena, which was built across the bay in Oakland. And in the Bay Area, there's a bit of a psychological thing, especially at that time, is people didn't like to cross the bridges to go from San Francisco to the Bay Area and vice versa. So all these fans that they expected to drive over the bridges to see the Seals didn't materialize. So then you had to educate people on the East Bay about hockey. So it was a bit of an uphill struggle. Plus, they had their first coach and GM was Bert Olmsted, who was, you know, a Hall of Fame caliber hockey player who was a great player but not a great coach. He alienated all the guys, and you know, some new management came in with the Seals, and that included Frank Selke of the Selke family, and none other than Bill Torrey. And they started to turn the Seals around. The first two seasons, seasons of 2 and 3, they actually made the playoffs. And then what happened is a guy named Charlie O'Finley, who was the flamboyant owner of the Oakland.
Owner of the
Right, yeah. He knew a lot about baseball. He knew a lot about being thrifty. And for some reason, he wanted to buy a hockey team, even though he would brag to people that he'd only seen one hockey game in his life. And we have actually the footage of the first press conference where he tells the press, "I don't know the first thing about hockey." And by the midway through that first season, they had new uniforms that were the Kelly green and gold uniforms that were like the A's uniforms. And he had forced out to Frank Selke and Bill Torrey. Bill Torrey, of course, goes to the New York Islanders and wins for the 5 Stanley Cups and builds a dynasty. And so that was the middle era
luck
of the Seal. Yeah.
And that's got to be near and dear to Chris's heart, living on Long Island and being a longtime Islanders fan. I'm sure he's familiar with that little part of the story. Let me bring Chris in. I know he wants to talk a little bit with you as well.
Great.
Hey, Mark. Great to have you on the show. So I was just wondering, and you actually brought up Wayne Gretzky, and from afar, you know, obviously you look at hockey today in California. I mean, 3 professional sports teams. It seems like it's thriving. And clearly no one has had, in my opinion, a bigger effect on that than Wayne Gretzky. I mean, the Kings were a struggling franchise when he got traded over from Edmonton and the impact that he had on the Kings and California in general. But I'm wondering, while he had that effect, how much did the California Seals, you know, help plant the seeds that that were kind of already in the ground, if you will, and Gretzky and that, you know, help those seeds grow to fruition? How much, you know, does the seeds – the Seals should take credit for how thriving hockey is in California today.
Well, that
especially up in the Bay Area.
Right. Yeah, he had a big impact. I mean, when I was a kid, I believe at that time, like in the late 60s, I believe there was maybe 2 hockey rinks in the entire San Francisco Bay Area. And as the Seals started playing, they built more. You know, there were quite a few more. And then now with the Sharks, there's a lot more rinks. So when you got kids playing hockey, that's a huge thing. And the Sharks, you know, I did a news story about the startup of the Sharks, and they were kind of they learned from the lesson of the Seals. And, you know, it's funny just how hockey has changed from the 60s and 70s. You know, the Seals front office, I think at that time under Finley, they had maybe like 10 people in the office, tops. You know, and now, I mean, the Sharks actually did a Seals tribute night last January, and we were walking through the Sharks offices, and it's just amazing how many people work there. I think they have more people working just on their web page now than the Seals did for the entire franchise. So, and then of course the Gretzky thing was huge. I remember in the late 80s when he had joined the Kings, they did a exhibition game at the Oakland Coliseum. And that was the first hockey game, I believe, at the Coliseum since the Seals had left, and it was a sellout. You know, and I actually used the part of the interview that I did with him at that time where he talks about how he hopes that they bring hockey back to Northern California. So, you know, that because of Gretzky, you have a hockey team in Anaheim, which, you know, was partly because of the Disney owning the Ducks at that time, and Michael Eisner, the head of Disney, his kids playing hockey and the Mighty Ducks movies. But, you know, that also translated with the Sharks getting a franchise, and all 3 are doing quite well.
Yep.
Well, I think one thing that the Vegas Golden Knights have done very well, and maybe it's a lesson learned from that exact situation, is that almost from day one, and certainly more so now. They've built a couple rinks in town. They absorbed the Las Vegas Storm, which was our junior team, and made them the Junior Knights. They've even as far as dragging Marc-Andre Fleury into the community the day after he was selected in the expansion draft and trotting him around to four different schools where he was hosting hockey camps for the kids in the gymnasium in 115-degree weather in the middle of June. And you know, you could have, you know, excused Andre Fleury to want to do his little wave on the stage and then get out of town, get back to his family, just won a Stanley Cup the week before. And certainly it would have been excusable for him to check out for a little bit. Him and all the other guys have been doing public relation meet and greets across the city, but especially with the kids and getting them in, making sure they got sticks, making sure they got equipment, and to grow what is the going to be the fan base here for years to come. A lesson learned from getting the kids involved early on in the San Jose Sharks. They're one of the more stable franchises in the National Hockey League now. And it's interesting that you made that point, as far as growth in the Bay Area and what this version of expansion can learn from that. Comment a little bit on the Golden Knights, if you could, and some of the other points that they might be able to learn from what didn't work very well with the Golden Seals.
Well, they have to think, you know, the problem with the Seals the first couple of years with their first coach general manager, we interviewed Tim Ryan, who was later became a broadcaster with CBS. He talked about how what a problem was just getting the coach to talk to the press, because, you know, he's a guy who's, you know, has been in Toronto and these other huge hockey cities where hockey players are gods, and he doesn't want to have to explain what hockey is to sports writers who don't know a lot about the game. So you always got to be thinking about public relations, you know, and getting out there and having the players meet people. And you know, the good thing about the Vegas thing is that you're going to have so many people, hockey fans, who are going to combine, well, let's go this weekend to Vegas and, you know, and have a great weekend and catch a game. So I think especially on the weekends, there's going to be a lot of sellouts. So that'll be great.
No, I agree. I did a guest spot on a podcast up in Edmonton, the Oilers YYC podcast this week, and they were they got a group of guys, 10-12 guys together. They got their Edmonton Oilers January 13th tickets, and they're going to come down. They're going to do a remote for their show from somewhere around town. And we look forward to meeting those guys when they get here. So to your point, that's at first I'm going to welcome having them come and take some seats up in the arena. But sooner or later, we're going to have to take our home ice and create that as a local home ice advantage. But first and foremost, I'd like the people from Canada and the more traditional cities to come catch a game here and actually see the facility, get a flavor for what the rink here is like and the hockey community that we're building here in Las Vegas, and then go home and tell all their friends. They're actually doing it right in Vegas, you guys. This thing has a shot, because I still get a lot of emails to the show of she should name the team the Las Vegas Nordiques because they're going to be in Quebec City in 5 years and all those kinds of comments. So at first I'm going to welcome it, and hopefully they can go back and see what a wonderful arena that we have here at T-Mobile Arena and spread the word that, you know what, the Vegas thing is going, and it's going first rate. So word of mouth is going to help a lot in that. Well, sir, tell everybody where we can go to download or get a copy of this, because it sounds and just talking with you today, I've learned a lot more about it than I ever knew about the Golden Seals, and I'm a California born hockey fan. Where can we find that, and how can people get their hands on the show?
Well, right now it's only available on iTunes. So if you go to iTunes, and it's called The California Golden Seals Story, and the film is also on Facebook. If you go to California Golden Seals Documentary, there's clips. If you go to YouTube, there's a lot of preview clips, the trailer, the link on on iTunes. Also has a link to the trailer of the film. It's a 97-minute documentary, and you know, some we got some incredible footage. You know, we got found all this old news footage that hadn't been seen in 40 years. We have old press conferences, game footage. We interviewed, I don't know if you know a guy by the name of Crazy George. He was a professional cheerleader. He's, I think, in his 70s now, but he was famous for going all around North America and banging his drum at games. He actually, he started with the Seals doing at their games. We have rare footage. We have the memorable night, a woman, the Seals, to get publicity, they hired the girlfriend of the stick boy to skate nude across the ice, so they get the media coverage. We have Super 8 film of that and a photo. There's just some wild stories, you know, just a whole different era. You know, the Seals were the first team back in an era when sports teams flew in coach. Charlie Finley actually flew them first class, so they had a lot of adventures getting drunk in the upstairs lounge of a 747. You know, there's a story about how they're coming back from Boston. They bought all these lobsters and let the lobsters loose on the airplane. there's the whole history of the World Hockey Association when that started, and the Seals when they were on the verge of becoming a playoff team, they lost more players to the WHA than any other hockey team. And then there's when the Seals again, when they were on the verge of becoming a very good hockey team, they wind up moving to Cleveland because of a failed arena that they wanted to build. So it's just a really, really incredible story and a look at a odd period of time in the NHL.
Well, sir, we appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us this morning. We're going to have to jump into a break here, but thank you again for coming on and sharing this piece of National Hockey League history. It's been a real pleasure talking with you, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on, and good luck with your new team.
All right, I appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Richmill, the creative force behind the Golden Seals. The California Golden Seals story is what it's called, and you can find that, as he said, on iTunes, and go on Facebook, check it out. I'm going to go on iTunes and I'm going to pull the link up and I'll tweet that out on our @VegasHockeyPod Twitter feed, and I'll put something up to it at VegasHockeyPodcast.com as well. That's pretty crazy, all the stuff that could happen in such a short period of time, Chris.
It should be a very intriguing story. I think people will find it pretty fascinating. So documentaries are great. I'm a big fan of them. They really suck me in, and it does. The topic could be almost anything, from sports to something serious or political or whatnot. So so we're gonna wrap up the show now. First and foremost, let me just say that, again, you can find our show at sportsology.com. Go to the radio tab, and I think you go under the given month, or you could just search Vegas Hockey Podcast. So that's Russ Cohen's site, who was on and gave us a good 45 minutes today. It's always great having Russ. He's very in-depth.
100%.
Knowledge. He's great. He's tremendous. And also Grandstand Sports. So you could find that. You could find Grandstand Sports at the grandstandsportsnetwork.com. Again, just click under shows. You can find the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Next week, we're doing the Pacific Division. So we're going to do a couple different things. One, we'll have Dana Lane on. And, of course, we're going to basically get a quick update on UNLV with him, as always. But then get his thoughts in terms of preview of the Vegas Golden Knights season, upcoming season. And then me and Mark are going to do our own segment, going back and forth, our thoughts on the upcoming Golden Knights season, what to expect. And then we're going to have good old J.D. Styles from Cali Sports News to preview the Pacific as a whole. So should be a fun show. And, with that, we'll end the show with the Metro predictions. I'll go first.
Sounds good.
I'm going to include the wild cards because we did the Atlantic last week. But I'll start with the Metro. Third place, I have Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is one of the top teams in the East, no doubt. They took a big hit in depth, especially, you know, they don't have two number one goalies anymore. Anthony Emme probably will be okay as a backup. You know, in addition to the depth hit that they took in terms of, you know, running the gauntlet two straight years of winning the Stanley Cup, it has to take its toll. Don't get me wrong. They're the kind of team, like, to me, it's not going to matter what seed they are come the playoffs. So
right.
When I say that, you know, some people are like, oh, my God, how dare you pick Pittsburgh third? And not that they're going to
settle down,
but I just – yeah, I think just I mean, I think they'll be fine. I think if, you know, again, the difference between finishing second and third could be 2 or 3 points, maybe one
right.
point. So I think they could find themselves with 102, 103 points because of that. And, again, they're going to be a team to reckon with, and I'm sure they'll load up at the trade deadline to try to get some couple key veterans that they lost. Second place, this is going to be a bold pick of mine, and I don't have my orange glasses on. I like the Islanders. I think they're a deep team. I think they're a hungry team. Reminds me of a couple years ago or 3 years ago where they had a good season and then missed the playoffs. And ironically, that year they missed the playoffs because of a bad start. They got a lot of talent on this team, both young and in their prime, and some good veterans. They have a lot of players with a lot at stake this year as well. Tavares' situation aside, I'm not worried about him. A lot of guys going to be free agents that can really score really good contracts. Someone like Brock Nelson, who's been a good player, at times better than that, but at other times too inconsistent, get a real solid season. He could score a huge contract. So he should have had the off season of his life. And I think there's going to be a real strong focus, and I'm really a big fan of Doug Wade. And again, you know, the difference between just missing the playoffs from them last year and, you know, finishing in the top three was basically one win a month. I mean, it's that slight in terms of the difference in the team's one-loss record. And then first, I like Columbus. I think they're going to be very hungry themselves. Believe it or not, they've been around, 17 years, and they've never won a playoff series. That's going to be their big mantra. They're not going to sneak up on anybody this year, but I think they're deep in terms of their four lines as well as their defense. Good backup goalie. Obviously, they have the Vezina winner. Bobrovsky, you know, again, he showed last year when he stays healthy and is consistent how much of a force he can be. And then my wild cards, I think the Metro is going to carry five teams. My wild cards are going to be Washington, and I'll go with another surprise here, Carolina. That's my prediction for the Metro and the wild cards.
Well, you kind of took my whole prediction too. I have Carolina as a wild card team as well. I'm going to put tough division. You could go any real order, and like you said, it could come down to just being separated by a couple points at the end, and whatever. It's not a slide on anybody's teams. It's just we got about 90 seconds to go here. I don't think anybody really jumps up from their point totals last year. And I think Pitt had 111 and Columbus 108 and Washington had 122.
Yep.
So do
yep,
I think
right.
that Washington is going to come off of that 10 points at least? I don't know. I don't know if they are. I'm going to go Washington 1 in the division. I'm going to say they stick
okay.
with it. I love Holpe. I think that a lot of them will have a chip on their shoulders this year to prove that they haven't lost too much. I'm going to go Penguins 2nd. I'm going to stick – you know what? Same order as last year. And I'll go with my second wild card. I'm going to go with Islanders and Carolina is my wild card selections. So
and who's your who's finishing third? Who's finishing third, third in the for you?
Columbus. I got Columbus.
Oh, okay, so you have the Rangers out.
Rangers out.
Okay.
Sorry, Rangers fans. We got about 10 seconds. Tune in next week, 11 o'clock Pacific Mark, and we're gone.